Game On 2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Thanks, Emma Powell, for entertaining you all this afternoon. It's Tuesday, the 8th of June, and this is Game On.
Coming up today, after trying times for the Republic of Ireland, will Stephen Kenny give more time to Troy in tonight's friendly against Hungary?
Harahan with the cross, and Parrott again, and there's another goal for Troy Parrott.
Excellent. Fantastic for Troy, getting in that far post. Talk about taking the game. Young player, a lot of expectation on his shoulders, but has done really well to get those two goals and get off the mark for Ireland.
Meanwhile, across the water, England have bigger tasks at hand. We'll be joined by Steve McManaman, who knows all about English expectation.
Arla, this is slick play from England. Shearer's there again, and McManaman is very free. Half an hour gone, and England are coasting. And Steve McManaman has scored the first goal of his international career.
That's right, it's football all the way tonight as we build up to the Euros kickoff. We'll also be joined by Stephen Kelly, Mark Langdon, Tony O'Donoghue, and Ireland's Jack Byrne and Ruaidhrí Littlejohn.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at Game On 2FM. We say it's football all the way, but Marie, it's actually soccer all the way because football is played in Croke Park.
Look at you.
Know that better than anybody. But anyway, Ireland are playing Hungary tonight at 7 o'clock and Stephen Kenny has named his team. Just two changes from the one that faced Andorra. Shane Duffy replaces Ronan Curtis and Adam Ida replaces James Collins. The starting lineup is Gavin Bazunu in goals, as expected. A back three is Shane Duffy, John Egan and Dara O'Shea, Matt Doherty and James McLean on the wings, Josh Cullen, Conor Houlihan and E. Jason Knight across the middle behind Troy Parrott and Adam Ida. Well, that's my best guess as to what Stephen Kenny is going to do with these 11 players, but Stephen Kelly is on the line to tell me if we're anyway correct and right.
I would say you're absolutely spot on, Ruby. I definitely think it's a trade
hey,
back.
A bluffer can get away with things.
Just sound confident, Ruby. You're so good at that.
No, it is. I think it's screaming out that's going to be a three at the back, with Duffy in as well. Three centre backs being O'Shea, Duffy and Egan, and then two wing backs. So Doherty in that favourable right wing position, which he came to prominence with Wolves. So it's nice to see him back playing there, because that's what made him so good and made him such a standout performer in the Premier League. He's not had an opportunity to play there that much since he's gone to Tottenham, so it'd be nice for him to get back in there. And McLean is made for that position, the way he defends and gets back. So it'd be interesting to see how it works out for us tonight.
Look, it's a much different game to the one they faced last week against Andorra. Hungary are obviously in the Euros now, they're 400-1 shots, but they're there and we're not, so it'll be a much tougher game, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's completely different to what it is. I know they're preparing to go to a major tournament. It's a big game for them. They think this will be good opposition to set them up, which is kind of more like the games we're used to for not going to a tournament. The Andorra one for us was purposely put in, I think, just to get that win under our belt, but this is a stiffer competition, so more realistic.
We have lost Stephen Kelly. Oh, you're back again, are you, Stephen?
I'm back, I'm there, I'm still here.
I'm still here.
What I was saying was, I think that with Hungary, it's definitely a more difficult opposition, and it's a team that is going to test us to see. The Andorra game was something that I think it was inevitable win. It was going to be loads of pressure if he didn't win, but this is more of to see where we are, how we progress, and what style of play we can. But we can't play like we did against Andorra in the first half.
He's gone again. He's back. You're in and out for us, Stephen.
I'm in and out. Sorry, guys.
That's all right. I'm going to just go back to, you've been on the show last Monday and you garnered quite a few headlines after your words when you just thought that the win against Andorra was going to almost be meaningless if they pulled it off. Now, they did pull it off, because it's almost like you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. Do you still feel that, just given that there was some positivity in the latter stages of the game?
Yeah, no, I still feel the same. In the grander scheme of things, I think it was meaningless in the sense that for the first 60 minutes, it was putting Stephen Kenny under even more pressure, which was almost unfathomable to think he was going to be under more pressure than what he was under. But the way we played, we didn't come out of traps well. They were pressing us and we just couldn't break it.
I think we might have gone back again.
I have the whole time, Marie, whatever's on. I can hear you the whole time, Stephen. Me and you were on the same path.
Well,
me
and you're on the same music,
whatever
Stephen.
The gremlins are in the 2FM studio, whatever link I'm on, Stephen, me and you are on the same page. We'll have a conversation. Marie can listen to the music.
Yeah, we'll have a chat. No, I do think that, you know, the positives definitely, with those players getting goals, Troy off to, you know, scoring ways, and that's huge for us to get people that haven't scored for us before on the score sheet. I think that's a massive thing. But in terms of the game, I think there was a lot that didn't go well in it. The way, like I said, specifically the first half, we didn't perform well. They pressed us high, and it was Andorra. It's not like it was Spain pressing us, or Italy or someone. It was Andorra, and we couldn't break it. They caused us problems. They scored first from what should be a routine.
We're going to have to let you go, Stephen, because it is going out on air, and we're going to come back in a very quick minute.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Firm's new high protein cooked chicken breast fillets, available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Stephen Kelly is with us. Stephen, I think that was probably Dunica trying to get back on the show again, slipping a few tunes in.
I think he was trying to get back in.
So just look, we're looking ahead to that game that's kicking off at 7 o'clock and is on RTE 2 television, the Republic of Ireland and Hungary. Just given the team that he has put out and the fact that they are coming on into this game with a little bit of momentum, are we going to see them play with a little bit more confidence? Are they going to start creating more chances and converting them, hopefully?
You would hope. And like I said, even though, you know, I kind of stick by my words about meaningless friendly when it comes to Andorra, because I don't think it was going to achieve anything in the sense of Stephen Kenny going forward as a coach. I don't think he was going to wipe away any of what's been set before. It's going to be games like this that are going to see where we moved on. But the lads, like the likes of Troy, whose season's not been great, two different clubs on loan, dropping down in another division, for him to get his two international goals, amazing for his confidence. Still a really young player, and you know, there's a lot of pressure put on him by everybody because we're dying for someone to get goals first. We're dying for someone to come in and really kind of pronounce themselves as a striker, a main striker again. But for him, great, and his confidence would be really high. You can see in the game, he scored the first goal and straight away he's more involved, more getting on the ball, dropping deep, picking passes, running to the box. It was hugely important to him. Hogan getting a goal, Knight getting a goal. They're players that are going to be important for us going forward. So having their confidence high and feeling that they can score on international stage will definitely be important, and hopefully that will show in the game tonight.
Yeah, and in fairness to Stephen Kenny, he did say earlier on today that it is the younger attacking players are the ones with the greatest potential, and if we want a team that eventually that everybody can identify with and keep supporting, then they're the players that we want to see doing their thing and going out there and grabbing these opportunities and showing what they can do.
Yeah, it's important, and I think it's great that they get an opportunity for Ireland, but I think it's a bit of a cycle. What's going to come down to as well is the opportunity to get a club level. They have to be playing club level at a high enough standard to be able to maintain a progress at an international level, because for us moving forward, we need those players to be playing a club week in, week out, scoring goals at club level, because you can't always expect someone to be at a club and not performing or playing at a lower level and then come in and perform at the international stage. It doesn't always happen. So for us, giving them the confidence from international football over the summer is fantastic, because they go back into their clubs now in the summer rejuvenated, looking to push on, hopefully getting more interest. If Troy needs to go on loan again, it might be a championship team might take a look at him now because of what he did in the summer. They'll see international pedigree, but we need those players playing club level.
Stephen Kelly, in a line call tonight's match, Ireland v Hungary. Most Irish fans want to know what will happen tonight.
I would say I think a draw. I think we get a goal. I think we'll be confident after what happened during the week that we're capable of scoring. But I can see a draw.
No, I'd take a draw on you. I don't know about everybody else. A draw would do me. Stephen Kelly, thanks a million. Obviously, 25 years ago, football was meant to be coming home at Euro 96 when the tournament was played in England. And a man who was part of that English squad that almost got there is joining us on the line. Steve McManaman, how are you?
I'm good, mate. How are you? You okay?
Oh, we're great. Thanks a million. All is very, very good. So it is. Steve, we'll take you back 25 years before we get to where we are now. And when you were part of that English squad, the Euros played in England, what was the expectation on you like?
Well, as you know, every tournament England are expected to win it. Of course they are. I think the favourites for this tournament, even though France are, you know, on paper are much the better side. But it was the same back then. We, as everybody know, we went to China and we went to Hong Kong, and when we came back there was a lot of headlines, of course, over the dentist chair and things like that. So it wasn't the ideal scenario and the ideal start up, the build up to a tournament. And actually, on the pitch, the first game we played, it was quite underwhelming as well, to be very honest. But then it started to pick up with the when we beat Scotland, and then the expectation started to gather around the team, and the fans got behind the team. It was a wonderful summer, and then it just grew as the tournament progressed, and I think that's what happens.
And Steve, what's that like? So you're in that situation, you're in that bubble, and everybody's looking at you. Your every single move is scrutinised. To live in that, like, can you just describe what that situation was like for you, group of players?
Well, it's quite surreal, really. We had the hotel to ourselves, as you can imagine, and we were locked away. Of course, we were watching the television, reading newspapers and things like that. Thankfully, we didn't have social media; it wasn't around then, because otherwise, I think it'd drive absolutely crazy with what goes on at the moment. But we were a fairly happy bunch. It was Teddy Venables and Brian Robson was one of our coaches, so everybody got on very well. So once we were locked in our hotel and training and being together all the time, of course you miss your family, you miss your friends, but you know that for the next 5 weeks this is how it's going to be, and you hope to stay in the tournament as long as possible and be in the hotel and be in this bubble as long as possible. But we were all very professional. We all knew what it meant to have a home tournament. And as I said, when the results started to happen and started to, you know, we started to be victorious, we knew then that something good was happening. And then on our journey from the hotel to Wembley, which would take about 40, 45 minutes, people would be out on the streets outside their houses, waving flags, cheering, and it really galvanised the whole country when tournament football goes well.
So you beat Spain in the quarterfinals, and you make that trip back to your hotel through the crowds, which must have been amazing.
Yeah.
And then you go back to play Germany. Darren Anderton hits the post late on. You cross the tomb. Penalties again. Did you ever forgive Gareth Southgate?
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because you don't expect to score 5 out of 5. That's the thing. And you know, when it cuts to 6, we were all like, "Well, who's taking the next one?" So, I mean, I think when you look back at it, Ruby, we probably should have beaten Germany that day. But if you take every game as it was, I think we were actually fortunate to beat Spain. I thought Spain were the better team on the day. So that's just the way it goes. But you know, when it gets down to penalties and you take 5 wonderful penalties, you don't expect the opposition to score with 5 wonderful penalties as well. And it's just the way it falls. You know, you talk about it, and the fact that it happened in 1990 was just one of those things. But let's hope Gareth can work wonders with the team this time around.
Was the aftermath difficult then to deal with, because there's such a high, and as you said, the expectation, the pressure, and then you come crashing down?
Yeah. You go back to the hotel, you crack open the beers, and then the very next day, you know, this team, this band of brothers that you'd say, that you've lived with for the last, 5 weeks, everybody just goes home and then you don't see each other then. So it is a huge, it is a huge come down the following day. You know, we were literally, I know in previous tournaments there's been that stupid third place playoff game and things like that, but this was, you know, we lost the game, we went back to the hotel, we had a bit of a drink with everybody, and then next day everybody said the goodbyes and all just went home, and then you don't get that group again together. So it is very strange. It's quite surreal actually that you're together and you go through everything together, and then you all just say goodbye, and then you just crack on with your lives again.
You did seem really close, and a lot of the narratives, I guess, coming out of the camp were that you were really close under Terry Venables and that whole group. Is it hard to get that close, because so much is put now on bonding and teams getting on and, you know, living in harmony for those 5 weeks?
Yeah.
So I'd imagine it's not as easy as it seems.
No, it's probably not. I think if you spend, 5 weeks with your best friend, he'd drive you around the bend, in the end. So if you do need your little bit of time. You do need your own space. You need to be, you can imagine in a group of, 26 players and numerous members of staff, there's quiet people, there's people who are crazy, there's people who are loud, there's people who are shy. So So you have to get that mix perfectly well. I was up with the England team last week in Middlesbrough, and they all seem to get on very well, I think. They all seem to be a really harmonious bunch. There doesn't seem to be a lot of, you know, clicks where, like, you know, a Liverpool bunch is against a Manchester United bunch, which is against a Chelsea bunch. You know, everybody seems to get on very well. And I think that bodes well going into the tournament. But we'll just wait and see, because we know that there's a lot of young players in the squad, hugely talented, we know that, but inexperienced players. And can they handle this tournament atmosphere? And can they handle, you know, the fact that they're playing in various stadiums, that, you know, some have got fans in, some haven't got fans in? So there's a huge amount of questions going into this tournament as well. But, you know, let's just hope it's a brilliant tournament. That's all we hope for.
Roy Keane raised the issue of Henderson and the fact that he didn't look fully fit before he played at the weekend, and questioned why he was he'd been brought along. Was he good at doing card tricks? Can he do sing songs? But from listening to there, you kind of maybe need those people as well, just to galvanise things and keep everything together.
Yeah, I think so. And look, he is fit and well. Of course, they'd have had, you know, they'd have spoken about that. And there's still, you know, a long time to go through this tournament, even if he's not ready for the first game. But the fact that he played 45 minutes, he must be training hard. He's a very experienced captain of Liverpool. He lifted the league trophy last year. He lifted the Champions League trophy the year before. It's very important that they have people like that about. And he's not there just to do nothing. He's there because he's going to be fit and well at some stage, and they need him. He's a wonderful player when he's fit and ready. And, you know, the players now, even though he can be injured, it won't take no long time to get back into full fitness. So, you know, it's important that Jordan Henderson is there.
When you look at the two squads, Steve, you think of the one you were involved in 96, and you look at the one for 2021, right, Harry Kane could be Alan Shearer. Ben Foden wants to be Paul Gascoigne, looking at his haircut. Is there any other similarities you can make in this squad?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of leaders in this squad. You know, we had, you know, the likes of Stuart Pearce and Tony Adams, who were captains for the respective teams at the time. A lot of real talkers in the team. And I think England have that. You see, they've got a huge amount of experience, the likes of Kyle Walker or Harry Maguire, if he's fit. They've got a nice mix of youngsters. They've got a nice mix of the way people play, the way Grealish carries the ball, or the way Mason Mount picks up positions. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of different options for England. And it's quite exciting when you see the type of players they have. You just hope that on the big stage, you know, when the chips are down, that they can express themselves and have the confidence to do that. As I said, it's fine doing it for your club on a weekly basis, you know, in front of your home fans. Anybody could do that. But when you're up against a France, when you're up against a Spain, you know, at Wembley, in a big tournament, which means everything, you know, it's whether they can have the confidence to really go through the motions and get the job done. We all hope they can. But it is difficult, this tournament football.
It is always very difficult tournaments of anything, but when you look at it and you look back to maybe the one weakness on that English team, could it be Jordan Pickford? He's hardly a David Seaman, is he, for reliability?
I mean, I think he's had his moments this year, isn't he, in an Everton shirt, but when he plays for England, he seems to do the business. His distribution is very good, we know that, and that nowadays is, as we all know in football, you know, it's paramount now for goalies to be able to play with their feet and do all kinds of, you know, wonderful things as a footballer rather than a goalkeeper. So he's never done any harm for Gareth Southgate. Gareth trusts him, and I think that's all you can say. You just hope he has, a tournament of his life and plays well. You know, if he does make a mistake, fine. You just have to go down the other end and score a few more. I mean, they haven't been scoring a lot of goals of late, because, you know, the way they shaping up. And I think it's a tournament where you're going to have to score lots of goals, isn't it? You know, you want your teams to be winning and entertaining and scoring goals and making chances. You know, you don't want them to be winning 1-0, 1-0, 1-0, 1-0, because other teams will be going out to score plenty of goals.
And there are some really exciting players, and you mentioned some of them already, and Ruby did too, the likes of Grealish and Foden and Mount. But who do you think should play around Harry Kane?
Well, it's hard. It's hard, really, to be honest. Of course, Mason Mount's in great form. You know, you can't go too gung-ho and have, you know, all of them playing, or Rashford and Sterling as well. So there has to be. It all depends on how Gareth plays. He likes to play with five at the back. He likes to play with two City midfielders, and already, you know, there's eight with your goalkeeper. So there's not much you can do going forward. I'd much rather play, you know, with four at the back, really, and then your two City midfielders, and then you get more attackers on. So I'd certainly, Harry Kane is of course, is a no-brainer. He has to play. He's the best around. And then you could have a Mason Mount and Holden, and then maybe a Rashford or possibly a Grealish at different times. But I don't think you can have all of them on starting at the same time, really.
Yeah, it's probably a good problem to have in many ways. And Steve, can they win? That's the big question, because I think when it comes to England, nobody ever asks can they get to the latter stages. It is always, can they win it?
Yeah. I mean, of course they can win. You know, it's going to be very difficult for them, let's be honest. When you look at the France team, you know, that is full of superstars, and they've got experience in winning major trophies. So it's going to be really difficult. You know, Germany are starting to play well again. They've brought a few players back. Spain are always difficult. You know, Italy are playing really well under Mancini, not conceding goals. So it's going to be difficult for England. But of course, they're at home. They've given themselves the best possible advantage with semi-finals and finals being at Wembley. So they've got an excellent chance.
And a chance is all anybody can have. Steve McManaman, thanks a million for talking to us this evening. I wish
you
the best
for
Euros 2021. Talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day with Green Farm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back, Ruby. It sounds like you know Steve McManaman.
I do know. I got to meet him a couple of times, actually, through AP McCoy. He used to have himself and Robbie Fowler at Horses in Training, so I got to meet him on a few occasions with AP. Good crack, Steve McManaman is, I must say that. I wouldn't have minded a few bottles of beers with him after they got knocked out, now, to tell you the truth. I'd say it would have been entertaining.
Yeah, he
if
does.
If nothing else.
He does sound like he is a lot of fun. A few little bits of news from earlier today. Kelly Harrington, who recently qualified for the Olympics, has won gold at the European Olympic qualifiers in Paris. She had guaranteed her place at the Olympic Games, and then she secured a 4-1 split decision in her 64 kg class today. So that was absolutely brilliant by Kelly. And I was mentioning on the show last night, Ruby, that I love this time of year, because it is that time of year when you start to hear about all the people who qualify for the Olympics. So while we were on air last night, Michelle Finn qualified in the steeplechase. We had her on Game On at the start of the year, and then after we got off air, Tommy Barr qualified as well. So it's just really nice.
And then the poor relay team got choked out.
Well, you got to take the good with the bad. No, that was actually really, really unfortunate for them. And seems like that they're going to appeal. Swim Ireland are going to get on to FINA and ask the questions why they were given that invitation to compete in the Tokyo Olympics and then have it rescinded a short time later. So, like, imagine the difficulty in that for the swimmers, being told that their dreams are going to come true, they're going to go to get into Olympic Games. And then been told that, actually, sorry, there was an error and you're not going now. So that's really,
really
difficult.
Really tough. Tell you one thing I find interesting about the Euros this year, Marie, is the setup of it. I know the way it's set up, and it's they're all different countries or whatever. But you look at it and you think, like, who did the logistics of it? Because you look at it, right, so you say the England group, England and Scotland, those games are played in London and Glasgow. Then you look at the Turkey, Wales, Italy and Switzerland group, the games are played in Baku and Rome. I mean, it's a 5.5-hour flight from Rome to Baku. So, like, Italy play all their games at home, Turkey play in Rome first, and then they travel back to Baku. So, you just wonder, like, there's definitely teams at disadvantages here compared to ones at an advantage. Like, St. Petersburg and Seville are in the Spain, Sweden, Poland and Slovakia group. Like, St. Petersburg to Seville, is 5.5 hours, which is none of the travelling that Italy have to do. Spain are based in Seville for the whole thing. I just think it's definitely there are teams at a huge disadvantage here when you look at the logistics of where the matches have been played. You look at the bottom group, France, Hungary, Portugal and Germany, they're being played in Munich and Budapest. That's only 1.25 hours. Anybody can travel 1.25 hours. A 5.5-hour journey for anybody is a fair journey.
Well, Stephen Kelly is with us again, and he has played at a major tournament. Stephen, the logistics of it, are you feeling that some of the teams are at a disadvantage?
Ruby just highlighted extremely well there. The teams that get to stay at home and don't have to travel so far, it's going to be easier. I think travelling these days with teams, it's luxurious. It's not like it's just lugging on a coach for hours and stuck in traffic. It's, you know, you're flying on nice planes, but still changes, and you're changing. It's a change of hotel, it's a change of how things, and then when you get there, there's just settling in period as well. But Yeah, anybody that's going to be home for most of those games or have the home advantage is definitely an advantage. But, you know, it's nice to get to travel and see these places. But in a major tournament, you want to be just focused on winning games.
But you're talking about athletes, players, no matter what way you go about it. If you're going on a 5.25 hour flight, that is 7.25 hours from hotel door to door. There's a meal somewhere in the middle. It's players picking, then not want to have dinner when they get there. It might be 6 o'clock when they arrive. They're not eating at the same time. Sleep patterns, everything. I just can't. I think, I know if I was playing in one of those teams that drew the short straw, I'd fairly have me back up before we start.
Yeah, and I think as well, when you factor into, you know, going to, as you get there, you have a day, and the games are so tight between as well, so there's not much time in between for travelling. Just after the game and travel, I always hated when we leave a game, if we used to travel, I would have preferred to stay overnight and travel back the next morning and get that rest. A lot of the lads like just to get home straight away and try and recover home because they say they wouldn't sleep after a game. But for me, when you get on a plane straight after the match and you travel back, it just knocks your sleep pattern out, and it takes longer for me to recover. And they're going to have to do that because of the travel around. It's going to make more, they need to get back to it to have a game in short succession.
We had Steve McManaman on a few minutes ago, and he was talking about how difficult it can be to go to a major tournament and spend quite a long time with a lot of people. He said that if you went on holidays with your best friend for 5 weeks, you'd be sick of them by the end of it. Just from that point of view, Stephen, what's it like, and how difficult is it to get that kind of bond and friendship together for that, and keep it together for that space of time?
It can be difficult. When we went to Euro 2012, we were together for a long time prior to the tournament, and then going into it, and we had, I think there was one day off in between. We spent a lot of it in Italy, and in Hungary as well for a little bit for a game, and it was difficult. It wasn't easy because you're away from your family, and you normally, even if you're with club, you'd have, like, if you have an away game at a weekend or a game in Europe midweek, you'd still get home to see family and friends, whereas this year we're just together. And don't get me wrong, you all get on well, but there's always those moments where it boiled over and there was something was said, and, you know, normally we brushed apart, we only together a little while, but then people are at edges, and it can be tricky to negotiate that, and it's the staff as well are trying their best to keep things going by organising things within the hotel. But like I said, when we were going to the Euros, Tony is very much of just, he didn't want us outside of the hotel. We had to stay together. We were very strict on where we were and stuff. So it was a long slog.
How hard is it to keep away from the fella that's annoying you?
Hard enough, continue training every day. The only thing is in football, if they're annoying you in training, you get to be able to give them a kick. So sometimes that works, and you can air your grievances on the pitch without going too far. You don't want to injure someone, but you know, sometimes when there's a little bit of argy-bargy, you get into a match, you can resolve it by a little bit of tough love in the pitch.
I was looking at Harry Kane, actually. He was talking about, I was looking at an interview with him, what he was doing in the hotel and how they were passing the time. And he was saying, you know, it's games of cricket outside. It's trying to play FIFA. It's just trying to find anything, really, to pass those hours and hours that you have when you're not preparing. What kind of stuff did you do?
I tried to read quite a lot when I was there, to be honest. Just tried to get as much as I've done. It was actually frustrating because we had a golf simulator brought to the hotel. It was amazing, but I broke my wrist about 4 weeks before we went to the tournament. I dislocated my hand and broke my wrist, so I couldn't play golf, couldn't play table tennis, couldn't play any of the games. The lads pool around because I was in a cast the whole time, so I literally just try and read.
Stephen, there's six groups in the Euro 2021, I was about to say 2020. That's, I keep getting hung up on 2020.
I think we're still calling it 2020.
Are they?
Yeah.
Turkey, Italy, Wales and Switzerland in the first group. Group A, what can you see happening there? Turkey and Italy surely getting out of there, are they?
You got to fancy those two. Italy, when it comes to major tournaments, even though, you know, they've not really been, I know when we, in 2012, they got to the final, but they're always a good side. They've got some great players. They know how to compete in major tournaments, and they've got a fear factor about them. When you go and play against them, people are always worried about them. And Turkey as well, you got to fancy. But Turkey, I think more likely, with the other teams in that group, that they could be the ones that could go, just because they've performed well up to this point, but I just think the other teams, there's always a surprise in there. Italy, I think, for definite. Turkey, I think possibly, but maybe when the other teams could sneak in.
But what about climate then? You have the Welsh players, all right, some of them are used to playing in quite extreme heat, but they're going to have to go and play in Baku. They'll be playing in Rome at this time of the year. Surely that'll be a huge disadvantage to Welsh players.
Yeah, it'd be a disadvantage, but you do acclimatise quite quickly, and as much as it's sweltering heat, and it will make a difference. And yeah, I know the UK, it's not been exactly warm this season, and never normally is throughout the majority of when they're playing. But being in a major tournament does kind of help. Like, there's a lot of adrenaline comes into it, and you know, I think they're going to be very much not confident, but have a feel-good factor about how they performed in the last tournament. They're going to feel that they're capable of beating big teams because of what they've done before.
Do Wales really need Gareth Bale to perform if they're going to get out of this group?
Yeah, absolutely. And we used to joke, actually, when the qualifications for 2016, and we had a few Welsh lads, Hal Robson and Canoe, Chris Gunter and one of the other lads were all at Reading with myself, and we used to call them Bales. We used to give them a bit of stick because he was scoring every goal for them. So no, they definitely need him to perform.
Group B is a fairly tight-looking group. Belgium are a lot of people's favourites, but is there an argument to be made that this very good Belgian side is starting to age a little bit?
There is, and will this Belgian side ever fulfil the potential, which is always the question mark, isn't it? When a team comes together, they've got so much talent, players that are winning things at club level all over the world and are performing at the highest level. When they come together, they've just never got to... They've never won anything, and they've always been pipped to the final hurdle. And it's whether or not this team are starting to dwindle, and the quality is starting to listen. They've got an abundance of talent, and Lukaku and De Bruyne, all these people that are there. But you kind of just feel, is it going to be one of these sides that will forever be the team that nearly did it but never did with all the talent? And you kind of think it could go that way for them.
There's obviously, concerns over Eden Hazard's fitness. Can they do without him, or will they have to have him?
I think he's been huge for them in major tournaments. I think back to the World Cup, and he was exceptional. He was so good for them. So not having him is going to be a blow. Absolutely, they've got an abundance of talent, abundance of quality players, but he gives something different. And he's not been the same since he left Chelsea. He's been so many injuries, and he just hasn't hit the ground. He's not been on form for Real Madrid at all. But if you can get, sometimes international football is what that player needs. They need that spark. They come back into it, and that's what gives them a bit more confidence. Bale, another player you talk about there, he's one that performs for international quite often. So maybe this for Hazard is an opportunity to show what he can do again, and you know, really kind of put some of the critics to rest.
Mark Langdon also joins us. Mark, we're just talking about Belgium and asking the questions whether or not they're a team who are ever going to fulfil their potential. It will be difficult for them to fulfil any potential really at the Euros if Kevin De Bruyne doesn't recover from injury. Do you think that he will be back and back at full fitness?
I certainly not for the start of it. No, I think that there would have to be concerns as to how fit he'll be, you know, for all of the tournament. I mean, you know, playing with a mask, some players don't mind and they're able to just play at a normal level. And for others, you know, it can impact on their performance. He's certainly not going to play better with the mask. I think it is a big concern, really, for Belgium. I was a bit surprised that it was a bit of a low-key sort of moment when it was sort of announced that the injury that he received, particularly because Eden Hazard has been just nothing like the player that we come to expect of him at Chelsea. You know, I mean, his Real Madrid form has been terrible. So De Bruyne was carrying a lot of Belgium's hopes on his shoulders, really. It was him and Lukaku rather than him, Lukaku and Hazard. And sort of to have sort of two of your main three sort of outfield players, Courtois is an excellent goalkeeper, but two of those three main outfield players not fully fit going into a tournament, I think has to be a concern for Belgium.
And just even given the fact that Martinez has been in charge for such a long time, can he keep things fresh?
Yeah, the players seem to like Martinez, so I think that shouldn't be too much of a problem. You know, he's not the biggest name, but he's definitely sort of won over that dressing room, and I don't think it was the easiest dressing room when he walked into it. I'm not sure maybe when he first went in there that everybody was amazed that he was the manager, but he's definitely won them over. So I don't think that would be an issue. The fact that they are just the age that they are, particularly defensively, is probably just a bigger concern. You know, Alderweireld and Vertonghen have had fantastic careers and are both still playing at a high level. They're just not playing to the standard that they were a couple of years ago. And for those two particularly, and for Belgium as a whole, they'll probably be one of those nations wishing the tournament had taken place when it was supposed to have sort of this time last year.
Okay, Mark and Stephen, stay with us. We're just going to cross over to Tony O'Donoghue. And Tony, as far as I'm aware, you're fresh from interviewing Stephen Kenny ahead of the Hungary game. What form was he in?
He was in very good form, actually. He seemed very relaxed, I'd have to say. And he revealed, of course, that it will be a 3-4-1-2 formation. So a change of formation from the game against Andorra. So that'll be three centre-halves. Shane Duffy comes into the side. He'll be the right-sided centre-half. John Egan in the middle and Darrow O'Shea on the left. The wing-backs, Doherty and McLean. So Doherty, McLean, Cullen and Horan are the four, if you like. Jason Knight will be the one. He'll be expected to do most of the pressing, and Parrott, who scored twice, of course, and Adam Eda will be expected to notch a couple of goals for Ireland again this evening. They are, of course, familiar with each other's play from the 21s in particular. But it is a very young side, you know. That's two 19-year-olds in Gavin Bazunu, who starts his fourth consecutive game between the posts for Ireland now. So he really is in possession of the number one jersey. So two 19-year-olds, two 20-year-olds, and that's Jason Knight, of course, and Ida, and O'Shea, Darrow O'Shea is only 22. So, I mean, look, when you have to take Stephen Kenny at his word on this as well. There has been quite the revolution. I mean, that is as young an Irish side as there has been, and what will be a stiff test for them, certainly. There's no question about that, because Hungary will be much better opposition than Andorra. There's a crowd of 14,000 in the stadium, so it'll feel more like a real game on a grass pitch. Hungary, of course, are in the group of death, you might say, when they finally go to the Euros next week. They've got to play Portugal, the current European champions, France, the current world champions, and a country called Germany as well, who are always pretty decent at these events. So, yeah, maybe they'll be looking forward to a send-off tonight in Budapest in front of their own fans with a game that won't test them as much, perhaps. But Ireland certainly will be looking to build on the 4-1 against Andorra. They finally got a win under Stephen Kenny after 12 attempts, and maybe this is the team to do it. I think Stephen Kenny is thinking as well. He's talking about putting these games together with the three in September as a kind of a block, and so the players who've impressed, including Bazunu, of course, will be in line now to start the 1st of September game against Portugal, all things being equal. I mean, obviously there's a lot of players to come back into the side, but the players that have been on this tour, who've been in camp and been in the team against Andorra and tonight's team, will certainly be in the driving seat come those three important qualifiers in September.
Okay, well, Tony O'Donoghue, I'm going to say goodbye to you now, and also to Stephen Kelly, and we're going to continue our Euro preview. We're joined as well by Jack Byrne. Jack, I'm going to go to you. It does feel like this Euro Championships is a really open one. There are a lot of teams that you could potentially see in a final and winning a final.
Well, look at France's group, and, you know, obviously Germany and Portugal and France. So, like, if one of them are going to be going out, it opens the door for the other teams like England and stuff. So, you know, like I fancy France for the tournament, and also in that group, I think Portugal might get out, and Germany might be the ones to miss out.
Yeah, there is a lot of exciting teams, and France are definitely one, Mark Langdon, that are people's go-to team, their favourites that they think are going to end up winning, because they've got such balance around the team, like not just one or two holes to fill. They have players everywhere. They could nearly put out two really good teams in this tournament.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some people in France that say they could probably put out three teams that would qualify for the knockout stages. You're right, Marie, it's just such a balanced outfit, and an experienced one. Without, we're talking about Belgium, are they too old? It's an experienced team without sort of being over the edge. If you look at sort of, obviously, Lloris is in goal for them. The back four, almost the same that won the World Cup, really. Just Kimpembe of Paris Saint-Germain man has come in from TT. In midfield, the formation might change slightly, but it's still Pogba and Kante as the two sort of key central players. And then you've got that three up front with Griezmann and Mbappe and Karim Benzema, who probably improves the team. He was obviously out for 5 years due to off-field issues. Yeah, they won a World Cup with Giroud, who played well in parts but didn't score a goal. You add in someone like Karim Benzema, who's been Real Madrid's best player for the last couple of years, put in with Griezmann and Mbappe, and it's a frightening front three when you think that they're very good defensively and have got real good balance in midfield. So I agree with Jack that I think France are the most likely winners of this tournament.
Obviously, Jack, France have a massive chance. What about Spain in a completely different group, in against Sweden, Slovakia and Poland? Like, they're all three games in Seville. Their last group game is against Slovakia, who are an aging side. They could get a pretty cushy run through their group before they get into the knockout stages.
Yeah, I think that always helps as well. I think it always helps when you have an easier group and you can kind of rest players. And I don't see them having any problem getting out of that group. I think they'll have a clear run. Straight out of that group. But Poland are a decent side. You know, we had Slovakia last year and we played against them, obviously, and they're not a bad outfit as well. So, look, it's I think Spain, they've obviously had a bit of trouble with the COVID. Busquets and a couple of them, had to self-isolate. So, I don't know how that's going to impact the squad. I know they're on the 21s are playing tonight against, I think, Lithuania, is it? So, you know, I don't know how that would have impacted them, but I think they have a good chance.
Mark, you might actually be able to just shed some light on that, because we are seeing some further COVID cases as well within camps that are heading to the Euros. And Jack did mention Spain there. We saw Kepa has been added to their bubble. But Sweden's preparations have also been thrown into a bit of a disarray because they've a positive test in the camp.
They have, yeah. Kulusevski, he can play on the wing or up front or off the main striker, plays for Juventus. Had a difficult time, I'd say, this year at Juve, but the whole of the Juventus team wasn't playing well, so it's difficult in those moments for any individual to shine if the team's not playing particularly well. But the season before last, he was the young player of the year in Italy, in Parma, which actually got him the move to Juventus. And I was really looking forward to seeing him play. I'm not sure yet as to whether he's absolutely sort of, you know, been ruled out and won't participate, because what they're saying with Busquets is that, you know, he might be able to play in the last group stage game or maybe be ready for the knockouts. And, you know, we've heard before about teams that plan for the knockout stages and then they go home before that arrives. But it's not an ideal situation, particularly for Spain. So many of their players now not able to train in a normal way. And, you know, they've got Fornals and Rodrigo play in the Premier League, Albiol, the veteran defender, all sort of, you know, in another bubble waiting to potentially get involved in this tournament. And Luis Enrique came into the tournament under fire for not picking a 26-player squad, left himself short because he said it would have made training too difficult, he'd have had too many players, and now he finds himself in, you know, probably the worst possible situation heading into a tournament. So I agree they've got an easy group. And they look like they should be able to get to the quarterfinals without doing too much. I just question whether they've got enough quality in the final third these days to actually win a tournament, you know, to beat two or three of the elite nations later on.
Well, they are supposed to get vaccinated as well this week, but even getting vaccinated in the middle of a tournament, Mark, like, it's all very strange and probably a little bit unsettling as well, because, you know, you do hear reports of people being a little bit unwell after getting a vaccination.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's not ideal, and I mean, not the only one. The Netherlands have had sort of bust-ups with you know, the media and players. You know, De Ligt had to come out and say he kind of apologised, really, because he said he didn't want to be vaccinated, and that then caused a bit of a stir. And then he come out, like I say, and apologise. I don't think it is ideal going into a tournament. It's not only in football. I mean, even in sports like baseball, where, you know, they play virtually every day, you actually get treated differently as a team in terms of what you're allowed to do, depending on how many of the squad have been vaccinated. But going into a tournament, you're absolutely right. You wouldn't want to miss sort of two or three days through illness or feeling sluggish or anything like that. So this was always part of the tournament, though. You know, this is why they went to 26 players, which is another reason why I just can't understand why Spain left themselves short. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Rusha, Little John is on the line as well. Rusha, we're talking about the Dutch there, Netherlands. I think they're in quite a trappy group. Ukraine, Austria and North Macedonia. They'd be expected to get out, but I wouldn't think there's certainties to get out of it the way they're playing either.
Hi guys, thanks for having me on. Look, going to be a tough group, but on Netherlands they are, you know, they're missing a few experienced players, and I just don't know if they're strong enough to get out that group right now. I think that could be quite a surprise. You know, myself, I'm sitting looking, and actually I wouldn't know who to back right now getting out of that group. I think Ukraine could quietly go about their business. You know, they're no mugs at these tournaments. You know, they go about their business. They're a hard team to play against, but obviously you're looking at Netherlands and thinking, yeah, they should be favourites. Can they get out? But you know, the way it's going right now, I don't know. I think missing Van Dijk and stuff and Van de Beek is going to be huge for them. They're key players, so I'm not sure how they'll do.
Yeah, definitely, Risha. When you think about, okay, Van de Beek was ruled out recently. They have known for a while that Van Dijk was going to miss it. But still, at the same time, when you think of talisman leaders, even though you can plan without a player like that, it's still really difficult for people to up their game and to replace somebody who is such a big character within a squad.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously, you look at Van de Beek at United right now. Look, it's not happening for him for whatever reason. I'm not sure why he's not playing. Is he not performing? Is it Ollie? Does he just not fancy him right now? But obviously, he's out now, so that's that. They've obviously got other players like Depay. Will he step up? But I just don't know if they're strong enough right now. Obviously, time will tell after the first game or two, but it's going to be interesting to see.
Jack, if I was pushing you, I said to you here, you have a free passport. Pick a team. Which one would you want to be in?
It'd have to be France. You know, I think the team they have is ridiculous. You know, I think if they don't win it, I think it'll be a big surprise. I think you know, they're 5-1, I think, to win the tournament, and I don't think you'll get them 2-1 to win beat any of the other teams. You know, once they get out of the group stage, they'll be 100% even money, you know.
Jack, we were chatting a little bit earlier about England, and I thought you might say England. We were also mentioning Phil Foden's hair. I know you know him pretty well. What did you think when you saw it today? I don't know if it's kind of blonde or grey. He says he's channeling his inner Paul Gascoigne, but it's a pretty impressive haircut.
Do you know what? If it feels different, the whole team surrounding in England this tournament. There's usually a lot of pressure on them, and you know, coming from everywhere. But it feels like they're free. You know, it feels like Phil Foden, Jack Grealish, these young players are just going and embracing it. And you know, I love that. I love looking at Phil getting his, you know, that boy hair, whatever you want to call it. And he just looks like he's saying, "I'm the man. I'm here. I'm ready to play. I'm going to attack it." You know, and I haven't really seen that from an England side going into a tournament, maybe not since, you know, Wayne Rooney was 18 and going into a tournament. So, you know, we think it feels different this year about England.
Is it the fearlessness of youth, really? Because there are experienced players, but there are a lot of players, like you mentioned there, who haven't had that massive experience, and they probably aren't really used to dealing with such severe fallout like you would get if you didn't succeed at a major tournament playing for your country.
Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with it, the youth. I think they're bouncing off each other. I think they're just all excited, and they all want to prove that they're, you know, ready to play on the big stage. I think the likes of Phil, Mason Mount, Reece James, you know, they've played in Champions League finals recently, so you know, they're well able to handle themselves, and I think they're just wanting to go there and prove that they can play. Look,
Mark, assuming England can win all their league or group matches, where will it be headed in the round of 16? Who are their likely opponents to be?
Yeah, well, this is the problem. If they do win the group, they will remain at Wembley, which is obviously a big plus, but they'll play the team that finishes second in, you know, what many people are saying, the group of death. So could be France, could be Portugal, could be Germany. They'll be hoping it's Hungary, but I wouldn't have thought that it will be. So I expect England to get out of the group, but that last 16 game, assuming they win the group, is really difficult. I mean, you know, even if it's sort of, you know, Germany and not quite at the level that they once were, you look at the talent on the pitch with Toni Kroos and Goretzka and Joshua Kimmich and Gnabry, Thomas Muller's back in the squad, Timo Werner, if he brings his shooting boots, Hummels is back in the squad, they've got Neuer in goal. I mean, that would be a really horrible match in the last 16. So I share a lot of the confidence about England and what they could potentially offer going forward. But you know, without getting too far ahead of myself, you do look at that last 16 and think, I don't really fancy either of the, any of those three teams. I think would cause England a lot of problems, because as much fun as what I think England will be going forward, the defence worries me. It worries me a lot. The goalkeeper, centre-back options, you know, it's a big concern.
Yeah, it definitely is. And Marisha, I actually really like Portugal, and I'm surprised that they're not getting more mentions in previews. Just when you look at the big name players that they have, like Ruben Dias, Bruno Fernandes, like Jota, Ronaldo, just so many players that are able to perform on the big stage. And I think if you put them all together and get them to play consistently, that they would be a real force.
Yeah, definitely. I think they'll be quite happy that, you know, they're maybe... they're kind of in the group, and all pressure's pretty much on France right now. So I think Portugal will be quite happy about that. I think they'll be looking forward to the games, being underdogs maybe. But they've got such a quality squad, so it'll be really interesting to see how it goes. I think for me, I'd be sitting looking, going, Ronaldo, he's obviously getting on a bit, but he's still doing the business. All he needs is a second to score a goal, and you know, that's just what he'll be looking at, and it's up to the other boys around him now just to provide them with chances and give them the service. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes. But I'm looking at that group, and I think Germany have got enough quality in their team, experience, youth, and I think they'll actually, I think they could come out of that group. I think I'm looking at France, yeah, like their teams are, they're so strong. But I think Germany have got enough experience, and you know, they've been in these positions before, and I think that they might come out the other end of it.
Richard, it'll be interesting as well to see how Scotland get on as well. They haven't been in a tournament for such a long time, and yeah, I think they'll probably be able to draw from that. But also they have good players as well, like Robertson and Tierney.
Of course, yeah. I think they'll be happy, you know, that they've actually qualified for the first time in 23 years or something ridiculous. But you know, they'll have to, you know, quickly adapt and get up to speed of playing at Euros again. You know, it's been such a long time, but again, no one expects much from them, so they'll be quite happy about that. Obviously they're going to have that rivalry with England. Obviously England will be favourites, but you know, I hope for Scotland that they can go and start performing. You know they're not just there to make up the numbers. You know, they hope that they can actually, you know, do a bit. It'd be nice if they could, you know, come on over England, but I'm not sure that'll happen, but we'll see.
Mark, when you're looking at the groups and from a race and post point of view, even angles for betting and for predicting what might happen, who do you foresee could have the easiest trip through this tournament? Could it be Italy winning Group A? Can they avoid a lot of big teams and get a long way without a big match?
I think that's a good point, Ruby. I think that Italy look to me to be sort of slated for at least the quarterfinals, and then, you know, once you're in that quarterfinal stage, then you nearly always run into a big team because it's difficult to avoid another one. But they're an interesting team, Italy. Unbeaten in 27 matches, which is the second best run in their history. They thumped the Czech Republic 4-0 the other night. I watched the game. Insigne, Immobile and Berardi, not the biggest name front three, but all have had decent seasons in Serie A this season. It's the midfield that I really like. You've got Verratti from Paris Saint-Germain, Jorginho you know, from Chelsea, Barella had a storming season when he won the league with Inter. Everyone expects Italy to be this sort of dull and boring team. That midfield is as technical as what sort of the Spanish team was that sort of dominated for a long time. It'll be brilliant to watch. My concern, actually, is more over the defence, and nobody ever says that about Italy, but Bonucci and Chiellini, they've been around the block just so many times. I do wonder whether it's one tournament too many, maybe, for them as a pairing. But if they can stay firm, and I expect them to defend pretty deep, I definitely wouldn't rule them out. You know, I've gone for France to win. If you give me another pick, I'd probably go for Italy second. I think that there's a lot to like about them this time around.
They could be in a quarterfinal against Belgium and maybe France in a semi-final. So that's how far they could get. Like, it could be Belgium before they have a serious game in the quarterfinal.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the group, Switzerland, Turkey, Wales, I mean, you know, they're all capable teams, but you would expect them to come through, particularly with home advantage. Last 16 is not going to be a problem if they do win the group. And I sort of spoke a bit negatively about Belgium when I first came on, so I would probably go for Italy to beat Belgium. And that's assuming that Belgium win the group, and I don't think that that's an absolute gimme, because I think Denmark are better than certainly many people predict. I know Ireland have seen enough of Denmark over the years to know that Eriksen's somebody that can cause problems. So I wouldn't be surprised if Italy got to the semis, then they play France, and, you know, having said that, I think France will win the tournament. I'd have to go for France there. But they're definitely an interesting team, Ruben, one to keep an eye on.
OK, Jack and Mark are expecting France. And Rusha?
I'm going to go for Germany.
Something different. I like it. Okay, Rusha, Jack and Mark, thanks so much for joining us. Jack, just very quickly before you go, I presume you're going to be watching the Ireland match. How have you found their game against Andorra and the squad that is heading out now tonight?
Yeah, I thought they done really well. I thought they, you know, obviously first half, you know, lads haven't played for a while. They've all been finished a couple of weeks, so, you know, it took them a while to find their feet. But then, you know, delighted for Troy and getting a couple of goals. Jason Knight, great to see. It looks like he's gone to a back five tonight, so I'm looking forward to seeing how they get on. Looking forward to seeing Duffy back in the team, and, you know, two up top, Adam and Troy. So looking forward to it. I think they'll do well again.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm looking forward to seeing the fans as well, because there's 14,000 there. I can see them on the telly. Jack, Rusha and Mark, thanks so much for joining us. That is all we have time for tonight. Tara Stewart is up next.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new cooked chicken breast fillets are 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected stores nationwide.